Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. I am your host, Chris Eaton. And before you say anything, no, this is not another Chris solo episode where I rant and rave like I normally do when I do these solo episodes. No, what you're about to hear is our San Diego Comic-Con 2024 panel. And I do apologize. I've been sitting on this for far, far too long. We are exactly 5 days out from the 2025 edition of Comic-Con. And I've been meaning to get to this, but unfortunately, life got in the way. You know, I spent a month in Japan. Jessica was in Japan right after that. And not only that, but I had a little move across country. So I'm getting around to this now. This was a fantastic panel. And if you're asking, like, wait, didn't you put out a panel episode? Well, yes, we did. But that wasn't our show panel. Jessica last year had two panels. We had our panel, and then she had her Godzilla 70th anniversary panel, which had Alan Hendry, TJ Storm, and director Ryui Kitamura. So that episode is up in our archives if you want to go back and listen to that. This, though, is our yearly podcast panel emanating from the San Diego Central Library. We were joined by Alan Hendry and TJ Storm. TJ wasn't originally supposed to be on the panel, but he said, hey, I'll come join you guys. We're like, more the merrier. A little quick side story. Alan, it was his first Comic-Con ever. The dude is amazing. If you ever get a chance to meet him, please. He's awesome. And same with TJ. I can't speak highly of either of these men. But both Kong and Godzilla met for the first time at Jessica's panel. It was like they had been friends for life because they bonded over their nerdish interest. It was amazing to see. I actually got some video of that up on our YouTube page. You can go check that out. But besides those two, we're also joined by Daniel Edry, the effects artist who animated Tiamat in Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And we are also joined by Dope Hope. We finally got Dope Hope on a version of this show, which I'm happy about. I love Dope Hope. He's a great guy, fantastic artist. Go check him out. He designed Tiamat. The version you see in the movie, that's his. So, what I'm going to do now is whisk you to past Chris and Jessica as we emanate from San Diego Comic-Con 2024. And hopefully, you guys will be joining us for our 2025 edition, which is in a few days as of the release of this episode. And yeah, sit back and enjoy some MonsterVerse madness.
Exhibit hall for a while.
Hi everyone, how are you guys doing? So thank you for making the trek out in the San Diego heat to make it all the way here to the San Diego Central Library. Thank you so much. And we do have something for all of you who are able to do that, so we're going to stay tuned to the end here. We did promise a free panel giveaway. So you guys can... I hear somebody in the front. Quietly do that. And my name is Jessica Say, and this is...
Hi everyone, I am Chris Eaton, and we are the hosts of the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast.
You know, our panel is about the year of Godzilla Kong, but mostly about New Empire. So there are two special gentlemen that are up here that joined, obviously, the two other special gentlemen, but the two closest to me. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
And who knows Tiamat that was inside of the film? Look at that. Well, see, look at all these hands. We hope we can see the other She was glorious.
Yeah.
I wish we saw more of her because she's seeing someone is clapping out there. You were the 3D modeler for it. Oh, I asked right when we drank a coffee.
Yes. Yes, 3D modeler, yes. Yes. Me, myself, and a few other guys, because it was quite a time crunch, but yeah. So, but yeah, I was responsible for the actual like animation mesh, what you would call.
And next to him is Dope Hope. How are you?
Hi. It's really cool to see everybody here.
And he flew in all the way from the East Coast.
Yes,
just
I did.
For you guys.
First time.
First panel, first San Diego Comic-Con, first time in this city. And it's beautiful.
I don't know.
Sir, what did you
do with Tiamat?
I designed Tiamat. I did the initial concept for Tiamat. Pretty much, so to speak.
Yeah, and what I love about panels is the fact that you finally get to meet people face-to-face that you've been working with. You two gentlemen have never met face-to-face.
No, this is the first time.
But you've exchanged a lot of, like,
absolutely, we're going to stay in touch. Emails. Yeah.
Awesome. And he will actually be signing at booth 2306. He's got prints, and he's got a special giveaway.
I don't know where it is.
It's here now.
It's back there.
Okay, the giveaway is here now, but the prints are over there. And Alan Henry, how are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Alan, who are you?
Who am I?
Alan
Henry is a very strange individual. in terms of the MonsterVerse, I am King Kong and Scar King.
Awesome.
I'm also the Cocaine Bear, if anyone has
seen
that little film.
That's great.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. So, it's a me.
So, yes, Kong, Scar King, and the Cocaine Bear.
That's so cool.
TJ Storm, how are you? A returning guest.
So, how many people here know who TJ is?
Everybody knows TJ.
Yeah.
For those uninitiated, TJ, who are you?
I play Godzilla, especially in Godzilla King of the Monsters in Godzilla 2019.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, just real quick, we have some photos to share. Alan, that is you. To prove that, you know, you're...
That I was around a place one time.
Yeah.
That making a Godzilla cosplay was incredible.
Yes. You know, TJ, this is you. Of course, everyone wonders, how are you standing in that water? But
That's what the J stands for, right? Jesus.
Yeah.
There she is.
Because that is you actually in. Oh, I tried to look a photo of this for you, Alan, but I couldn't find one. Hence the photo reference.
Oh, very very secretive.
That's great.
I sleep in that.
So, yes. This beauty.
Beautiful.
Now, when you guys designed her and were working with her, Dopo and Daniel, did they give you any sort of hint how long she would be on screen? Because many people really loved her. She became a fan favorite. Mm. And they wanted her, I mean, spoilers, she ascends to the heavens, the Kaiju heavens, but they wanted her around longer. Did you guys get any hint of how long she would stay?
Do you mean, like, lengthwise?
Like, lengthwise in the film.
Oh, no, they don't tell us a thing. They don't tell us anything, so we had no idea.
On that note, for both, so I guess we'll start with Dopo and Daniel. When did the process start for you guys with TMI?
I was lucky enough to work on TMI as early as 2019. So it's been 5 years since from the concept to where she shows up in the movie. But she did show up in the comic, right? The Godzilla Dominion comic, where her design was slightly changed or whatever. But that's how long it takes. Like, behind the scenes talk, it took about 5 years from concept. But I don't think the concept was being worked on for five straight years. It just sat dormant for a while until it was ready to be used. And that's my understanding of it. So by then, I was forgotten about.
Did you see the toy downstairs?
I have not, but I want to buy it. Is it available for purchase? Because I'm not leaving without it.
Thank you very much. Always thank you to the AV team of every single San Diego
Comic Con. It's at Diamond Preview booth. They say their things are sale, and I was asking, and they're like, you guys go down, actually, the booth where he's signing is right next to the Diamond booth, so you can actually see Steamon figure.
Let's try to get a couple.
For you, when did you start on the process?
It was probably only about a year ago. I think we were fairly close to the movie's release. But it was a very quick turnover for a 3D asset that's this detailed, because they basically I got you know, my supervisor reached out and said that, you know, we need to make a kaiju and it needs to hold up next to Godzilla, which is very, very intensely detailed creature. And we basically had about, I think, just over a month to create, to take Joe's concept 3D sculpt and turn it into something that can be animated and rendered and you know, glow in that way. So, and I did know how long that she would be on screen because we get a rough cut of, you know, like they'll make a, what's called an animatic, which is sort of a reference, a rough reference for everyone that's working on the project to kind of know what the story beats are. But, you know, it's the nature of my business that even if something is on screen for 30 seconds, it still needs to look amazing, you know, so we still had to put in every bit of care and love as, you know, all the other kaijus, Kishimo and all the others.
So a question for all of you, we'll start with TJ and move down to Daniel. When you guys were watching this film, you two are obviously, your characters are the protagonists of the film. Did you think that Tiamat was going to be a fan favorite? Kind of like how we don't really see Boba Fett in the original for very long, when he becomes a fan favorite. Did you see that coming because she's so well loved? Or like, wow, she was so powerful, I wish I saw more of her.
Part of the storytelling is what happens before you see the thing. They set it up really well. They're like, oh, there's something out there. Oh, it's a really powerful one. It's a big one.
Yeah.
So the setup is amazing. Yeah. And then you see it and you're like, okay, that's badass. And you just hope that this is going to be a great clash. You don't want it to be over because that model is absolutely stunning. It's absolutely gorgeous. So, yeah, I loved it. I absolutely was like, yes, yes, go, go. So it was really, really fun to watch, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the setup, and I enjoyed the payoff.
I honestly didn't know if it was going to be a fan favorite, because I don't really understand how fandoms work. I, based on my own opinion, though, I fell in love with Tiamat. The moment she appears and comes out and just coils herself up was so cool. And yeah, I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in terms of from a kaiju. Because a lot of them are, you know, land-bound and they're walking around and smashing things. And Godzilla has a lot of mobility in the water, but then to see Tiamat, who's more mobile, I was like, ooh, a threat. I like it. But, I mean, you know, it's films.
Not so much a threat.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tiamat will come back. They always do.
I hope so.
What about you?
I'm thrilled that people like her as much as they do. I'm torn about her dying the way she did, because on one hand, I would love to see her return and make multiple appearances. And there's a part of me that thinks that she just might, especially when people talk about her online and stuff, so keep doing that. But but also to have her die at the hands of Godzilla in a scene that proves he's a badass,
yeah.
That's kind of a badge of honor also, so I'm cool with both ways. But I would love to see her come back, for sure. Because maybe she's got regenerative abilities that we don't know about, you know?
Yeah,
or maybe there's another species, or who knows, man? It's science fiction. Anything could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Sorry, the question was...
Did you think, after you watched the film, that she was
going to
be a fan favorite?
Oh, you know, I didn't, just because, it's hard to know how people are going to react, but I mean, I am overjoyed that it stuck with people, and I definitely was loving it in the theater. I was in, like, the third row and saw it on IMAX, and was, yeah, just cheering, and popcorn was going everywhere. Yeah. Very happy.
Did it have the name Tiamat when you guys were working on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you work that lore in? Because Tiamat's from D&D. I don't know. As far as I know, but I'm sure it's older than that.
I think it's a legendary.
Mother
of Dragons.
It's a legendary.
I think it's from, like, don't quote me, but Babylonian.
Tiamat.
It's an old name.
World.
And it's not a five-headed dragon. That's only Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I was like, oh, is it that Tiamat, or are we just calling it Tiamat? but yeah, I mean, it's You never know. Sometimes they use code words and things. Like, I worked on Stranger Things on the Demogorgon.
Mm.
And in the very early days, the show was called Montauk.
Mm.
So I didn't know that Montauk is a real place. So I was like, oh, that's like an alien name. This creature is named Montauk. So I kept calling it Montauk, and then saw the show and was like, oh, okay, it's not called that. I named all my files Montauk.
This is great Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Nerdy stuff.
Got a good idea for a new film, though. Yeah.
Montauk.
Well, yeah. Montauk. Godzilla meets D&D. Yeah. I'm from the bottom of the planet, man. I don't know.
So, Montauk, the legend is that there's an island off, like, a couple miles away that's a testing facility. Ooh. And every once in a while, these weird creatures would wash up on shore. And at first, people were like, oh, it's just a, you know, maybe it's a hoax. But more and more, some pigs with beaks, and it was weird. Like, it looked like genetic engineering gone wrong. And that's where the whole myth of Montauk really started, because there's things called the Montauk Monster. You can actually Google this once we're done with this. And it became this weird crypto hotspot after, like, 2010.
Nice.
But they were also working on, like, kids with mental abilities and such, and that's why they called the show that, because she was... What 11, she was, what 11 yeah. can right. do yeah. is what they were trying to train these kids to do.
The Stranger Things, I think, was based on a book series. Sorry, we're going on a tangent.
Yeah, real. Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah, this is real good fodder for Kids on Bikes, the TTRPG. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking at?
No, definitely not.
The Montauk.
That was the work stuff business.
Pig with a beak.
I've seen worse things.
You're not joking.
Yeah, we thought you were joking. It turns out you're not.
Look it up. It's weird, man.
The Montauk Monster.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Oh, whoa. Yeah, all right.
Scene.
Yes.
We're still going to talk after the talk
after this. That's the currency in the monsters. And Alan and TJ, is this the first time you two have met?
Tis the first time we've met in person.
Yeah, so yeah. Exactly.
Did you fight?
People together and Kong and Godzilla are together.
Yeah.
Since the first time you two guys have met.
Yeah, he lives on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
Literally. And we've been talking about D&D, comic books, anime, and Magic the Gathering for the last hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been great.
Sounds about right.
We just did a panel about 2 hours ago. Alan was outside. We met. By the way, cool, one of the coolest dudes I'll ever meet. And then, TJ was stuck because of some technical issues. I had to go get him as we're walking to the panel. I'm like, have you met Alan yet? He's like, no. I'm like, you two are going to hit him immediately.
Yes.
And the second they were talking, it was like they had known each other for 25 years.
But your character's fighting in the movie.
Mm.
So did you have stand-ins that you were kind of acting off of, or?
Wow, good question. Good question. So often the majority of my work is in New Zealand at Weta FX, and it's usually me and some other performers just standing in for things. I'm not sure if we worked on any of the Godzilla stuff. Oh, we did some stuff. And we did. There was one point where I came in and they were like, hey, Alan, how are you with suplexes? And I was like, I'm fine. I had my old, you know, one of my old movement coaches was a pro wrestler, so he taught me how to suplex. And they're like, good, good. And that was all they said. And I was like, what does that even mean, guys? And then I got suplexed for about 2 hours. And and they felt bad. So during the lunch break, I suplexed a bunch of people. So it was fine.
Who's suplexing you so you can hit the
ball? Yeah, there were... there was a guy that I had to teach how to suplex so that he could suplex me.
Pro wrestling parlance, it's a lot of trust, guys, because you put someone else in your hands. You literally are teaching a guy, like, this is how you don't break my back or my neck.
Yeah.
So doing like that. Ballsy.
I mean, what better teacher, right?
Yeah.
Than someone who'd be like, you're going to be throwing me, so don't screw it up, please.
That's so cool.
You know, from a fan perspective, Daniel, we'll start with you, and then we'll end with TJ. We call this the year of Godzilla and Kong. We were at G-Fest earlier, like North America's largest Godzilla, oh, 2 weeks ago, Godzilla convention. We had Jared Krzyzewski, who was the concept designer for like Shimo, Starcade.
Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah, oh, very cool.
The other gentleman was Brian Cucciolato.
Yep.
He is the writer for DC and Legendary Comics. Godzilla versus Kong. And both
it's awesome.
Did really
such
well.
A cool comic.
His comics has so many variant covers. His comics are selling out. The movie did very well.
Yeah.
You know, this is really the year of the two major characters that we didn't think we would see a third installment of. The first was back in the, was years ago.
62.
So, from your all of your point of views, did you guys, like, why do you guys think these two American and Japanese properties coming together doing so well? Because some people can say, it's cringy, I don't really, I like their worlds to be separate, but others love it. Why do you guys feel, from a fan perspective, or even a story perspective, why do you think it works so well that these two characters are on screen and on paper together?
Well, I mean, they're both beloved characters that have been around for, I think the first King Kong movie was in, came out in the 30s?
33.
Yeah.
33.
It's crazy. And, of course, the great Ray Harryhausen. And, or was that Melissa Bryant? I get that. Sorry. And Godzilla has been around since the 40s. These are, you know, such legacy characters. And they have strong fandoms on their own, and I think why not, you know, bring them together and see what happens, because it's happened before, and, you know, there's been Godzilla versus Kong movies, so yeah, I think it's just fun, you know, like why not, you know, people want to see Batman fight Superman or Iron Man fight the Hulk, you know, those are fun.
Me, you look lost in
thought. Well, no, I thought you said you were going to go back to TJ.
No, we're going to start with Daniel. We're going to go end with TJ.
Oh, gotcha. I think it's just fun to watch them fight. I mean, it's like a gorilla versus a crocodile, but essentially is what we're watching fight. And if you were just watching a real gorilla fight a real crocodile, you're going to sit down and you're going to watch that. You're going to watch the shit out of that. So, like, that's just entertaining. And then, but then when they team up and then they fight other things, that it doesn't... Come on, it's just...
Yeah.
It gets like... Now there's a lion in the mix. Like, it's just crazy. It's just entertainment value is off the charts. Whether they're friends and they're fighting other monsters or they're fighting each other, or you just mix it all up and they're all fighting each other. It's come on, it just doesn't get better than that. But if you keep doing it and keep doing it, at some point it just gets a little old and then you got to branch out. And then at some point you come back. So that's why it keeps happening. It happened in the 60s, it's happening now, and it's just going to keep happening because people are going to keep watching it. That's how I feel about it.
Let me ask the audience, how many of you guys here became fans because you watched the Toho movies back in the day? Okay,
it's fine. You can be honest. It's fine. We don't judge.
And who likes the Roland Emmerich Godzilla?
Roland Emmerich's one. Yeah, man. It's got a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yes.
Continuing with you, what your perspective? Why Godzilla Kong? What Maxine Lacy?
I mean, I'm biased because I've only done the Kong and Skull King performances. For me, I think there's a lot of connection for an audience through Kong, especially in these more recent ones. You can see that Kong is... You see how soulful he is as a character. You see how thoughtful he is and his desire to have that connection with his family, but also the connection he has with Gia and then eventually with Zuko, spoiler alert. I think as peoples... We're also trying to find that connection. You know, we're trying to find our people. We're trying to find our fellow weirdos. So I think that's how... I think that's why Kong endures. He's also a big sweetheart. So, with a robot arm. And, you know, like, yeah.
He's the best kind of sweetheart.
Yeah, from one titan holding up a gauntlet, destroying the universe, to another titan holding up a gauntlet, saving people. Like, well done.
Oh.
I think Ken Watanabe said that it's best. Let them fight. That's why we go to kaiju movies. We don't go to watch them dance through a flowery meadow. We go to watch them fight. And who better than Kong? So it's just fun. And if they can team up to fight something bigger, even better. So I think that's part of the fun. And I love it. Ever since I was a child, I love it, and I still love it. Also, Batman vs. Superman? Really? That's not even... Come on, man! I'm teasing.
You know, I think those are really good points, and the fact that people just really like to see... It's basically like a giant monkey or ape fighting a crocodile, and people see it... I mean, I was going to say people see it all the time on National Geographic, but I hope
just
not.
Move to Australia.
Was like looking for it. When you all saw the first Godzilla Kong film of the MonsterVerse, did you also think that you guys were going to get a second film? Did you think we, as an audience, was going to get a second film?
Hell yes.
I hoped we would. Not just from a financial perspective, but just from a fan perspective. I was like, that was great. More of those, please. It was the same when I watched Pacific Rim. I was like, yes, more robots fighting more monsters, please.
And then we got Pacific Rim Uprising.
Hey, look. It's big monsters. It's big robots. I love it.
Now, Henry told the story in the previous panel, but I think it was... isn't because I heard DJ tell the story. When both of you came in for your respective roles, both of you had no clue what you were doing, right? They just gave you like directions, and then you did some stuff. Yeah. And then afterwards, it was like, okay, you're Godzilla. Okay, you're going to be Kong.
Yeah. Like, oh, wow.
They dropped that kind of brick on me. Can you kind of just like a Cliff Notes version of those tales so you can get a better version of it? Because it's not eloquent. DJ,
yeah.
Oh. Somebody called me and they're like, "Hey, come help us with this project. Everything in Hollywood is super top secret. They don't tell us anything until we're there half the time, and sometimes they don't even tell us what we're working on when we're working on it until they've locked us in and they decided we are the one." So I got down there and I fully expected to coach someone's movement because I thought they were already in the middle of shooting something. So I got there and it was an empty stage and there was three of us, and this is like 2017 or something. And my friend walks up to us and he goes, "All right, you're Mudo number one, you're Mudo number two, and you're Godzilla." And I was like... And the 8-year-old inside of me was like... But the professional was like, "Let's go." We had to create the movement and figure out how we moved because they didn't have a model for me to look at yet. For whatever reason, there was no model ready. So they're like, the first thing out of my mouth was like, "All right, show me the creature so I can understand the posture." They're like, "I think they're still working on it, so you make it." I'm like, okay. So I took out my phone and I started watching Haruo Nakajima's performances and some of the performances after that, but also realizing that in the motion capture space, you saw what I'm wearing. It's just a tight outfit and it allows me a lot of movement, whereas Haruo Nakajima was wearing 200 pounds of rubber and some mint, and he could barely move. So I wanted to keep that heavy weight, but at the same time, I wanted to have all the movement that's possible for that creature, and I think we achieved that.
Yeah, he definitely achieved
that. Is that how you kind of equipped a bear-esque performance? I've heard people describe your gods as such a 24 king, like, ooh, it's like a big bear, like an angry bear.
Absolutely. I have a performance capture school. I teach people how to move for performance and how to act for that stuff. One of our classes is called Beast Mode, and in that class, we have a system for building creatures. And the beginning of that is for you to believe that what you're watching on screen is real, it should be attached to something real, so you understand it.
Yeah.
So we'll have people go out and research an animal, and then bring that animal back. That's the base. That's where we start. We're going to change it quite a bit, but for Godzilla, I used a bear, because his arms were already forward, and when he stands up, he does these very particular things. And then I changed it a little bit, because the posture suggested reptilian and stuff like that. But bear is definitely the base good item.
Alan, your story.
That's almost a play-by-play of TJ's. I got a phone call from some of my friends at WitFX, and they just said, "Hey, Alan, we're doing some performance capture. It's for like a big ape. Do you want to come in?" I had previously done work for the Apes franchise, so Planet. We did Dawn and War for the Planet Apes. We did some for Kingdom as well, but I also did some for Jungle Book as King Louie. And they were like, "It's kind of in your wheelhouse, Alan. Can you come in?" I was like, "Sure. Yep, it's another big ape." And then we got there, and the conversation was, "Okay, Alan, so we're doing this film. You're King Kong, and he's going to be waking." And they just kind of rattled on. And I was like, "Hang on. Did you just say King Kong?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you're King Kong. So you're waking up, and you're a bit groggy, and the sun is in your eyes. You're going to get up and then scratch your butt and then go have a shower in a waterfall." Those were my notes. So I kind of, like TJ, I had to be very professional and say, "Of course, yes, let's do that." Whilst on the inside being like, that was that journey. And then because of Godzilla vs. Kong, when the new Empire came out, they were like, "You want to come back and do King Kong?" And I was like, "Sure." And then they're like, "There's also this other character. Can you help us with, please?" So that's how I got kind of King Kong.
Who was that character?
That was Scar King. They were like, "You can do big apes. Do you want to do this one that has super long arms?" And I was like, "Okay, yeah, sure." Again, 8-year-old Alan being like, "Yes!" So that's the weird Alan Henry version of TJ's story.
Now, with Kong, that's kind of a two-part question.
Sure.
So, You worked with Weta. They clearly did a Kong film 15 years ago.
Yes.
So, and Circus was that Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So this is a completely different Kong.
It is.
So you got to add your stuff to it. But with Sparky, that's a whole cloth character.
Yeah.
How much input with that did you have? Especially with his
mannerisms. That was Scar King's journey was very cool because we had some great notes from Adam Wingard and his VFX Alessandro, and they basically said, "We want him to be very different to Kong because people are going to draw the distinction of like two apes. Are they related somehow?" And they said, "We want him to be very different. So we want him to feel like an evil cowboy slash gangster with the mannerisms," and that's all we got. And then I collaborated with the animation supervisor Ludo and the motion editor, actually Dave Preciado. The three of us collaborated and tried to find the way that he would use his length, and it was really cool because we with Kong, they were like, "He's a big gorilla, so base it on a gorilla," and some of the previous work that was done in Skull Island. They were like, "There's your reference." But for Scar King, they were like, "Let's find some other references." And at the start, the way that he kind of leans back and bends originally was really, really exaggerated. And I said to them, "Is this a JoJo reference?" And they're like, "What?" And then I showed them the JoJo pictures of like all the wild leans. And they're like, "No, but hold on to that." And when he checks out Kong's tooth, originally it was a bit more kind of like this, like he's trying to figure it out. And they're like, no, play with the length. And that's how we got that real laid back. Kind of, you know, just he, like Scar King doesn't care. He's so cool. He knows that he's the boss. We watched a lot of films. We were talking about it before that featured like that very very broad Japanese gangster. You know, they're also like, just real laid back in their fine cut suits, and they're like, "So yeah, that was that. That was a long answer to your question. I apologize."
That's a great answer. Dopo.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Dopo, you should see his other Godzilla art, because I've been singing the praises of this man before I got to meet him, and he does some of the best. Like, stylized, but it's still the essence. And you're like, "Oh, God, this is what the modern stuff should look like." So with Tiamat, if you know your Godzilla lore, there's another sea serpent monster in Toho Godzilla, which is Manda,
Well, I knew right off the bat that any serpentine creature in the MonsterVerse was going to immediately be compared to Manda. So why fight it? So immediately I was like, all right, let's try to show some inspiration somehow. So I put the four legs in. But I also did a version of just two legs up front and then no legs and let them decide. But I absolutely chose to have the legs like Manda because I knew they were going to say, you're just doing Amanda. Regardless, because I can't, I actually don't think Tiamat looks anything like Manda, but that's what they're saying. So, yeah, definitely. I also wanted to be as long as Manda. I wanted Tiamat to be able to constrict Godzilla with, and still have plenty of tail to flourish and head to flourish. I'm not sure if they gave her that much length, to be honest, but that's how I envisioned her, like super long, like to like wrap around Godzilla and still, from a distance, look at him. And laugh in his face or whatever. Like really be powerful with the length.
And did you think this, I mean, as a fan, when we saw that fight, like, it felt like a classic, like, it felt like, well, the deleted scene from Destroy All Monsters, but, like, it felt like such a Manda moment. I'm sitting there watching, like, This is incredible.
I always wonder. I always wanted to see that scene that was deleted. I think there's pictures of it online. But I thought there was a scene where he actually coils around Godzilla.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm thinking. I would have loved to have seen that. Like that's like a holy grail for me to see it. So to watch Tiamat to be able to do that, it's amazing to me. So yeah, that was definitely on my mind. Not as much as you would think, though.
Well, I do have a couple of questions. However, and we're going to open it to the floor. Does anybody have any questions? If so, there's a microphone in the middle. You will fit all. We're all so shy.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions?
We don't play.
Go for it.
No.
Go. Yeah, go.
Come on.
Yes, quick.
Thank you.
To the mic. Line up in an orderly fashion.
We do ask.
Or you could fight.
Yes.
Don't. No, don't.
Questions, please.
I got to ask a little bit earlier with Alan, but I find it really fascinating is that you have to act as small as you want for relatively versus you have this giant Godzilla can you share a little bit more about the scaling? So you kind of share that, I mean, really you're trying to embody these postures, so all the constraints that they would have, but are there other things like breathing and how does, you know, these kind of things get scaled to size?
Great question. One thing you touched on there, the idea of the breath. A lot of the training that I've had always stems from how does a character breathe, because that will inform how they move. And in terms of scaling, the motion edit department at Weta FX are phenomenal. They're absolute magicians with what they can do. So I imagine it's the same for you, TJ. Our job is to embody the truth of the character. So if a character is scratching their face, it's more truthful for us to scratch our face than to mime scratching a big face up here for the sake of a model, because that can be retargeted and shifted and changed, and they can slow down time, they can change the gravity. So it's a lot of collaboration between, if you hope, ideally, it's collaboration between you as the performer and the visual effects team.
For me, I enjoyed bringing the weight of Haruo Nakajima's Godzilla, and they kept telling me ours is going to be bigger, and I'm like, okay, bigger, and they kept saying no, bigger, and so when I started to understand the size of it, I'm like, if I walk at normal speed, I'm going to cause a hurricane or something. So can I really slow down? They're like. So, can I do it real quick? So, thank you.
Yes.
The speed of the walk is like.
Oh yeah.
And so that.
That's so cool.
I wanted to give weight to every single step, and. Then, when he starts to speed up, which I felt instinctively that it should be slow because he becomes an unstoppable force. Once he starts running, nothing's going to stop him. So I wanted you to feel that. So I would always start at that speed, But if I saw the Mudo or Ghidorah, you can see him start to go boom, 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 boom. And then it speeds up and you're like, ah, it's a train, it's a train. And it worked. I feel like it worked. So, yeah, that's our process.
Really cool.
This is for Daniel and Dilko. I have a son who's in high school right now. He's considering going into 3D modeling as a career choice. Do you have any advice?
My advice is what I tell everyone who asks me this question. Practice every day.
Mm.
Every day. Don't miss a day. And you just get in there and you don't have to start with like mind-blowing anatomy that's going to bore you to tears or make you get all depressed. Just start with a monster face, a monster, something that you like looking at all day, like an animal that you just adore, something silly, something that gets you in there and marries you to that interface. And it's like going to the gym. Like you just go, you do your half hour, you get your reps in. It's just like that. And you do that after 6 months, after a year. You're just so much better without even realizing it. And that's when you get the confidence to keep moving forward. Because if you give it up after a week and let 2 weeks go by and then try to sit down and sculpt something again, you get scared. And the fear pushes you away from what you're trying to accomplish. Mm. And that's all I can say is go every day, practice every day.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to piggyback off of what Dilko was saying, I think it's important to find the joy in what you do, because there are aspects of 3D art that can be kind of tedious and you can get frustrated, but your son's very lucky that he has a mom that's supportive and everything. That's a huge step up right there, because a lot of artists struggle to find that support. And but I would also say that there's so much information on YouTube, for free. There's a lot of tutorials, and then when you're ready to take the next step, there's some schools out there. I'm currently teaching at Noman School of Visual Effects in North Hollywood. They're an amazing organization. So if you want to chat afterward, I can give you some more information about them.
When I was a kid, my friends drew nonstop in their books. Yeah. What did you guys draw growing up? What was your thing to draw? What was it?
The same thing. I was drawing Godzilla when I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs, dragons, sharks, crocodiles, aliens.
You ever drew a crocodile fighting a gorilla?
Yeah.
I probably did.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
My question is sort of old fashioned, so just real quick, if you guys could give maybe like input on something you like about the other person's work, like working with the design of Tiamat versus how it was animated and executed, and then, not critiquing, but something you enjoy from a total performance and something you enjoy from a top performance.
Sure.
First off, Tiamat was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was spectacular. Yeah.
Incredible.
It is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was beautifully executed, so that was really, really fun to watch, and it gave a new dimension to our world, which we need, and I think that was beautiful. And you can't imagine, I mean, you guys often work alone for hours at a time, so they go unsung, and we show up, and we're like, yeah, I'm Godzilla. But these guys, worked months before we ever get there or we ever get the call, so they're the unsung heroes, and that is freaking beautiful. This man, dude, Kong is cool, but Scar King was sexy as hell. Tell me that wasn't awesome.
Yeah, hell's in. Yeah. Scar King.
Having a memorable and fun bad guy, a villain, that makes the film. Yes, you go to see Godzilla, the name's on there, Kong's name is on there, but who? Why? Because they have to team up because the bad guy is so badass. So much style, cool character design as well. So that's my two cents.
Mm. Yeah, right on. I mean, I've admired TJ's work for a long time. As a creature performer and an actor, as well as a big, big nerd. I can't sing TJ's praises enough.
Try.
Well, TJ is lovely and so generous. TJ is an incredible performer and a wonderful, wonderful person. And I echo what he said. Tiamat was beautiful. That concept art is... you can see her energy and her power. You like, it's only a still image of her roar, but you can hear it.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. Yeah, the way that she moves is brilliant. When Godzilla blasts and she snaps out and looks at him, it's got that vibe of like an angry old lady coming out of her house, being like, "What the hell are you doing?" You know, like it's
my lawn.
Yeah. So yeah, you really, in the brief time that she was there, she made an incredible impact, which I think really is testament to your skill as creators and artists. So thank you.
So I'm definitely going to speak to Daniel's treatment of Tiamat for the film Glorious. I mean, I cheered when I saw the movie. I was like a little kid watching that happen, and that's thanks to you, obviously. But I also want to compliment you. I didn't know you did Scar King.
Yeah.
And Scar King, when I first saw Scar King, I was like, this villain has so much swagger and so much personality. I love the scene where he gets up and just saunters over and looks over down. Yeah. And I'm like, that is so badass. And that's you, 100%.
Not
bro.
Just a generic.
Really,
nature,
really well like done. That
personality.
That was killer. Yeah. And 2019 Godzilla might be my favorite.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah, man. You know, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I remember. Because I think I'd been doing maybe some sort of more boring tasks. Not boring, but you know, Doctor Strange has to pick up a soda, and we need you to model this soda or something like that. And then they were like, "Oh, we got something good for you. We got a monster." And then when I saw Dope Pope's design, I mean, I fell in love with it. Just I've always been really enamored with. Asian-inspired dragons, and I think you put a really wonderful twist on it, where it's still recognizable as that.
Right.
Because they're very. It's not only reptilian, but it's got a little mammalian. Mm. Like the feet are a little bit like kind of like paws a little bit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just had so much fun, and I want to give it a shout out to the rest of my team. Matthew Aaron, he was the supervisor, and he kind of took. He sort of was the intermediary between your initial concept, and then we kind of continued to work and try, okay, what kind of spines are we going to have? You know, one row of spines, we're going to have three rows of spines. And then Robert Pashayan, he worked on the body, and I kind of more focused on the head. And I think maybe he did the coloring, and then
who decided on the pink? Because my designs initially had no pink at all. I had more like purples and stuff.
I'm not even sure, but I remember there early on them being like, "Yeah, we really want to focus on the glow, the bioluminescence, and everything." And I don't know. So did you do the glowing?
I did bioluminescence, but most of mine was like light blue,
more
like Godzilla-esque.
Yeah.
I knew they would alter colors and whatnot.
So I even took your concept art and lined it up with the face, and I projected that your design for the bioluminescence right onto the model.
Oh, wow.
So that's basically still your design, maintain the spirit of your
design. I didn't know that.
Design.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And they wanted
it to like kind of have like hot spots in the middle and then kind of fall off. So that was it was a fun challenge to try.
Thank
to
you guys for keeping the design.
Yeah.
Like, so like, as
Absolutely.
Soon as I saw it on the screen, I was like, "That's my work."
That's it. Yeah.
I was thrilled.
That's a great feeling.
I know it changes, and I was okay with it getting changed, but it didn't change that much.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
If anyone wants to go into this line of work, it's an indescribable feeling. You know, you're sitting at your computer and you're clocking in, doing your stuff, and clocking out, but then at the end of the day, if you see your work on screen, see your name in the credits, it's you're on cloud nine.
Yeah.
So we actually have a quick one last question. You could just pick one person. The last two, though, you guys may ask your question to these gentlemen outside. You're going to be here for like a little bit for anyone who wants photos or to ask about the Haruo Nakajima Scholarship over at TJ School, the Nomen School, anything like that. Yes, can we hear your question?
Sure, yeah. So my wife and I play a lot of Monster Hunter, and so we got really excited when Tiamat showed up and showed her fins that looked a lot like Mizutsune, who also draws a lot from Asian dragons and stuff like that. And we're just wondering if all of you played Monster Hunter, or if that's just a convergent evolution type situation, or if you actually drew some inspiration.
Zero, I swear to you, there's zero inspiration drawn from that creature.
Yeah.
I was unaware of that design, never played Monster Hunter. And this was back in 2019 when I designed it, so I didn't know that it existed, or maybe I did see it and I didn't realize I was bleeding into it. But but when I saw how similar the designs were, I was shocked myself, because I was like,
so excited.
I think I can't pronounce that name, Mitsuzune or whatever, has more of like a body.
There's
a body. It's not as quite as serpentine as Tiamat, but the neck frills, oh man, that was like exact.
Yeah, no, we were
totally coincidental, I promise you.
So thank you
very much.
And this is the free poster giveaway drawn by an official Toho artist.
Oh, nice. I want one of them.
Can I? Are we allowed
to? This lovely woman right here has all of the tickets that she'll be passing out.
You have the tickets. We'll pass them out at the door as you're leaving, or if you're staying, we'll bring you a ticket. Just so you know, like she said, pick it up at the Manchester Grand Hyatt in Grand Hall A and B. To enter, please use the bay side of the hotel next to the roll-up door, or whatever that means. And it's open from 10 till 8 Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and 10 to 6 on Sunday.
Right on.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you all for coming.
Yes.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, everyone.